Here and Now is a production of WBUR Boston in association with the BBC World Service and PRI.
I'm Robin Young. It's Here and Now. And we're at the end of quite a week in Republican presidential politics. How did candidates fare? Well, a new Washington Post ABC News poll shows 70% of Republicans polled said reports that Herman Cain may have sexually harassed two female employees do not matter when it comes to picking a candidate. In fact, Herman Cain actually rose in that poll. He blames Rick Perry's campaign for unearthing the harassment claims. They deny that and have had problems of their own this week after an exuberant speech Perry gave in New Hampshire led some political observers to wonder if the governor may have been on pain medication.
This is such a cool state. I mean, come on, live free or die. I mean, you know, you got to love that, right? I come from a state, you know, where they had this little place called the Alamo, and they declared victory or death. You know, we're kind of into those slogans, man. It's like, live free or die, victory or death. Bring it.
Well, today Rick Perry said it was a good speech. He'd give it again. And his camp also suggested, hey, look over there at the Romney camp. They may have leaked that stuff about Herman Cain, to which the Romney camp said, not true. As to Romney, a Washington Post report laid out how, as governor of Massachusetts, he assured liberals that he would represent them nationally on the issues of abortion and gay rights, that he would change Republican Party thinking. This week in New Hampshire, he responded to questions of flip-flopping.
The nice thing about writing a book is that I could lay out what I believe on a wide array of issues that face the country. And I think you'll find that I've been as consistent as human beings can be as I look at those issues and as I try and apply those principles to government.
Well, what do voters think about all this? Let's start with an end-of-week roundup. With us, Jay Newton Small, politics correspondent for Time Magazine. Jay, hi.
Hi, Robin.
And Peter Walston, national political correspondent for The Washington Post. Peter, welcome to you as well.
Thanks, Robin.
And we're going to start with Peter. We will get to your reporting on then-Governor Romney. You wrote that article on his time as governor here in Massachusetts, but your paper also put out this new poll conducted this week. What do you make of Herman Cain's rise?
Well, it seems like if you're running in a Republican primary and the media, and there's a perception among a lot of primary voters that the media is out to get you, that it's just good for you. I suppose. But he's, if you look at into the numbers, there's a lot of people who just don't believe it. You pointed out 70% say it's not serious. So at the moment, anyway, as long as these allegations remain kind of vague and hard to pin down, we don't really have any face behind the allegations yet because none of the women has been able to step out and speak
because of the agreements they made in the settlement.
Right.
Well, his supporters like Sean Hannity, Ann Coulter, have positioned this as liberals attacking a black man because he doesn't have their politics, and as if to underscore that comparison with Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. Herman Cain did an interview with Thomas's wife, Virginia. She asked him if reporters were setting him up to be guilty. Here's his response.
That is the D.C. culture, guilty until proven innocent.
So, Peter, that does seem to be resonating, even though other observers are trying in vain to say, you know, this isn't just about allegations or even settlements or payouts. It's about the handling of the crisis. Tell us what the numbers say. Is that making a dent?
Yeah, I mean, it seems as though the people who are inclined to support him are rushing to his defense, and among voters, that's the case. They're the ones who are inclined to not take it seriously or not believe it. But, you know, there are some indications in the poll that it's not all good. I mean, 37% of Republicans think that the allegations are serious. Like, that's not a majority, but it's a third. I mean, that's still a lot of people in a primary. And a lot of Republican-leaning independents also take it seriously, and women take it seriously. So, you know, maybe it's not hurting him at this point, but it could still hurt him down the line. And certainly if, by some way, he gets the nomination, it's probably not going to go over well at that point.
Well, but Jay Newton Small, again, of Time Magazine, you've been out on the trail. And even though these poll numbers might look real good for Herman Cain, considering the headlines this week, you say he still can't win in Iowa. Why?
Well, I mean, let's just look at polls for a second. I mean, national polls really have never been very indicative of anything except momentum in the media, and which is why Herman Cain has been winning national polls. But if you look at Iowa and New Hampshire, Herman Cain already had a problem with women in Iowa. He was already losing women in Iowa, and I think that this could really hurt him more. But let alone, I mean, setting aside all of that, he has no infrastructure in Iowa or New Hampshire, and these are retail states which take huge amounts of time investment, staff investment, money investment, and he hasn't done any of that. I mean, he just doesn't have any kind of staff presence that you would need in order to win either of these states. And so I think a lot of this is Herman Cain, the creation of the media, and then the Herman Cain media frenzy and story that's continuing it.
Yeah. Well, what, and what about the gaffes, though? We want to ask you both. He's had the series. He joked about Uzbeki Stan, and there was that smoking commercial. One of his aides smoking in the ad. He said in the same sentence, he said he was absolutely 100% anti-abortion, and then except in the case of rape, incest, or the health of a woman, a family would have to decide. You know, contradicting himself in one sentence. And then there was his exchange with Judy Woodruff on PBS NewsHour. She asks him, "Do you view China as a military threat?"
Yes, they're a military threat. They've indicated that they're trying to develop nuclear capability, and they want to develop more aircraft carriers like we have. So, yes, we have to consider them a military threat.
Peter Walston, China has a nuclear arsenal, a big one. And one of your colleagues, Washington Post opinion writer Jonathan Capehart, writes, can white Republicans not criticize Cain because he's black? And Jonathan is African-American. So what's the talk on this?
Well, you know, it seems like he does not have a grasp of foreign policy. I mean, he's made it. There have been a number of other interviews where he just, when he's asked about specifics on Iran and so forth, he just doesn't seem to know. It seems as though he doesn't really know much about the specifics or the issue. So that's a big problem among some people, certainly. But I'm not sure I would describe all of those instances that you mentioned as gaffes. I mean, the smoking commercial turned yeah. into kind of a sensation and helped him raise a lot of money. There's a lot of people who might appreciate the fact that somebody isn't bound by the typical conventions of politics. So that seems to be one of his strengths. But it's all of this stuff kind of contributes to the idea that he just can't be taken that seriously, which is maybe his biggest obstacle if he's actually serious about running a campaign.
Peter Walston of The Washington Post, J. Newton Small of Time Magazine. As we take a look at this week past, I want to talk about the other candidates. But it seemed like sort of a lost week, like, you know, a reality show lost week, because can anything really happen until the Cain issue is somewhat resolved? Is this the week that will be written off as eaten up by that?
I think it probably will. I mean, certainly, you know, as long as all of this is going on, Mitt Romney is sort of happy to let this, you know, play out, and he just sort of is keeping his head down and watching, you know, Cain accuse Perry, and then Perry accused Romney, and then Romney just didn't say anything. He just sort of kept his mouth shut, and all of the sort of red state commentators and conservative bloggers were saying, well, wow, Romney's the adult in the room. He's not engaging in all of these crazy politics. And so it's funny to think it was, you know, what is it, 4 years ago now or 3 years ago now that you know, John McCain accused Barack Obama of being a celebrity, and that was like, oh my God, that was just awful. And now look at the state of this race. It's like it seems to be all about celebrity, and it's really, it is sucking the oxygen out of the race. And there isn't really any discussion of substantive issues or anything going on about, you know, jobs or the economy or the country. It's just all about sort of these gaffes, these crazy Perry's crazy speech, you know, all these accusations of Cain, and it's really not a traditional race at all.
Well, let's take a look at some of these things. First of all, you mentioned Mitt Romney, you know, the front runner with Cain. And the story, Peter, that you wrote in The Washington Post about not just we know that he has changed his opinion on, for instance, abortion and gay rights. He said as much. He said he's evolved. But you wrote in your article how he went out of his way to reassure liberals in the state, gay rights activists, pro-choice activists, that he would represent them nationally, that he would change Republican Party opinion about those issues. And that article, I think, got a little bit buried this week.
Yeah, I mean, maybe our timing wasn't the best, but I think it's an important aspect to his record, which is, as you said, everybody knows that he's changed on issues. I mean, he acknowledges he changed his mind on abortion in 2005. But I think what sets Romney apart from kind of every politician who flip-flops, I mean, President Obama's had his share, everybody does it, but for political reasons, but what sets him apart is that he did actually take this very assertive and aggressive course of meeting with liberal activists, and of which there are many in Boston, and when you're running for governor of Massachusetts, that you have to work with them. And he did say, look, I'm going to rise nationally in the party, and you should stick with me because I'm going to be a good voice for you. Those were his exact words, a good voice in the party for abortion rights, for instance. And he said that he would help, that the abortion issue was, quote, killing the Republican Party, in his view. This was in 2002. And that he would be a voice within the party to soften it, to move it more to the left. That's not just flip-flopping. That's somebody who goes out of his way to campaign on a certain viewpoint to certain people. And it just, you know, I just think that's maybe more than a history of flip-flopping.
Well, if he's the candidate, it'll be certainly be picked up down the line. But, Jay, what about Texas Governor Rick Perry? We heard a little bit of that exuberant, I keep using the word exuberant, speech in New Hampshire. It's getting a lot of YouTube hits. He's saying it was a great speech. He quotes Peter's colleague, again, Washington Post correspondent Dan Balls, who was in the audience and wrote that it, well, he compared it to Romney's stiffer style and said Perry appeared loose, animated, playful. So, you know, Rick Perry's people are seizing on that and saying, you know, the Washington Post liked it. What's your sense of did he even cut through with that?
Well, I think that maybe if you'd been in the room and it's sort of in the back of the room, like Dan was, it wouldn't have seemed quite so strange. But certainly, with the close-up angle and the camera, I mean, he's sweaty. He's trying to pull the tax card out of his pocket to sort of illustrate how his tax plan would be very simple. And he kind of staggers back three steps, and he can't quite get it out of his jacket pocket. And then he finally gets it out with this flourish of triumph. And I mean, my favorite moment was when they gave him a bottle of maple syrup, and he sort of turned it upside down, and it was like a stoner watching a lava lamp, you know, watching the syrup pour down to the top, and he was like, awesome, you know, just, you know, this crazy moment, and here this man is running for president. And I think, as I wrote this week, he's trying so hard to be likable, because he has this mean guy kind of bully persona or bully sort of stereotype from the debates, from his past in Texas. And so he's trying to be this likable guy, but he comes off as kind of really silly sometimes. It doesn't have the gravitas of, say, president. And I think that that's sort of what he's missing right now.
Well, both of you, we got about a minute left. Just, you know, with the news that we have, reports of poverty rising, the huge gap between the very rich and the very poor, the two separate reports, a report yesterday on corporate taxes. Corporations pay very little. Some Republican lawmakers in Washington making noise about accepting tax increases to get rid of the debt. Serious issues floating around. Peter, just quick from you, do you think we're going to get to them?
Get to the serious issues?
Yeah.
Well, people are working on it in Congress. They kind of have to. They have a deadline of Thanksgiving, this Congressional Supercommittee does, where they have to come up with a plan, or else there are going to be huge cuts to the military and national security, or I guess they could come up with a way to get around that deadline. But yeah, people are dealing with it. They're just not getting any attention.
Well, and hopefully they'll get some attention from the presidential candidates as well, with the short time they have till the first voting January 3rd, Iowa, January 10th, New Hampshire. Peter Walston, national political correspondent for The Washington Post, also J. Newton Small, politics correspondent for Time Magazine. Thanks, both of you, for wrapping up this wacky week.
You're welcome.
And just ahead, MF Global CEO John Corzine resigned. Will regulators now tamp down on some of the regulations he was fighting against? In 1 minute, here and now.